Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode in our series on Spanish history. We left off the last episode with the death of Carlos III, Spain's enlightened despot. Carlos was an energetic, proactive ruler bent on reforming the country, modernizing the country, but without sacrificing his own absolute power. He was successful in many ways, and for a few decades there, Spain, at least for a time, had returned to center stage in Europe as one of the great powers. It would not last very long. His successor was his son, also named Carlos, and he became Carlos IV. If you ever needed an example of why the monarchical system is flawed in some ways, Carlos and his son Fernando would be perfect choices. Just about everything that had been rebuilt in the previous 40 years would essentially fall apart in the next 20 years, proving that despite Spain's drive to keep up with the times, there were some foundational problems which had never been addressed, at least fully. Carlos IV himself was known to be rather lethargic, unenthusiastic about the state of affairs of his country, heedless of the needs of his kingdom, and more than happy to let others do the work for him, namely his ministers and his wife, the Queen Maria Luisa of Bourbon, as well as a man named Manuel Godoy, whom we will get to in a second. What Carlos really enjoyed doing was hunting, a lot of it. It's pretty much what he did as a prince, and he seemed to see no reason why he should change this routine just because he was given the job of running a major European country with one of the most extensive empires the world had ever known. On top of that, Carlos's ascension to the throne could not have come at a worse time. He was proclaimed king when he was 40 years old in 1788, just a year before the French Revolution erupted and changed the course of Europe, and in many ways the world forever. Monarchies and aristocracies around the continent feared for their lives, especially after Louis XVI and his wife Marie Antoinette were beheaded. That awful demise sent shockwaves throughout the continent. Carlos at first seemed somewhat oblivious to this delicate situation. At first he tried to stick with his father's policies, especially on the international stage, and avoid getting involved in wars. He had some capable ministers on his team, like Florida Blanca and Jovellanos, but eventually the most influential advisor was a young officer named Manuel Godoy. Godoy basically came out of nowhere, coming from a modest military family in the region of Extremadura, which is to sort of the western side of Spain. Nothing about his career or place in society suggested he would rise to the level of influence that he did, and yet he did. Now, how was that possible? Well, it was simple. He became the queen's lover and the king's confidant. And the threesome would maintain this triangle for practicality's sake for the rest of their lives. Now, if Godoy had limited his role to that of being the queen's toy boy, I guess that would have been one thing. But the fact is, he slowly decided that he deserved a bigger say in national policy in just about every aspect, especially international affairs, and he became basically the king's favorite and the prime minister. Godoy came to the conclusion that Spain needed to stick with France, even though France had done everything it could to threaten royalty. The French were at war with the British, and Spain allied itself with France. Now, Spain's support of France would lead to two major disasters. One took place in 1805 when a combined French-Spanish naval force took on the British off the coast of the province of Cadiz. And one of the most important naval engagements of all time, the Battle of Trafalgar, the square in London, Trafalgar Square, gets its name from this battle. Here, the British ships were outnumbered, but the commander, Lord Nelson, whipped his opponents and entered eternity as one of the great military minds in history. But unfortunately for Nelson, he would be mortally wounded in the battle. The outcome spelled the end of Spain's revived navy pretty much for good, or at least for many, many decades to come. And it facilitated the departure of Spain's colonies now that there was little this country could do to stop their calls for independence. The second consequence of siding with the French proved even more catastrophic. Napoleon decided to punish the Portuguese for doing business with the British, their traditional allies, and to do so, he needed to enter Spain and cross it to get to Portugal. Godoy and Napoleon reached an agreement and signed it in the Treaty of Fontainebleau, which would allow the troops to enter Spain, and then a joint invasion, if successful, would lead to the division of Portugal into three different states or kingdoms. Godoy, in fact, would be named prince of one of them, no less. So he was a very ambitious man. In any event, many people in Spain by this time were fed up with Godoy and the way he ran the country, and they were blaming the queen, his lover, Maria Luisa, for this, and basically Carlos by association. So Carlos's own son, Fernando, decided that his father was not up to the job and plotted to overthrow him. The plan was discovered while the family was at the El Escorial Palace outside of Madrid. This was in 1807. A trial was hastily held and the accused acquitted, and Fernando was forced to beg for mercy. Carlos probably should have taken stricter measures against his deceitful son, accepted his apology, and banished him from state matters. It wouldn't take long for Fernando to return, though. In the early months of 1808, with tens of thousands of French troops marching across the country and even entering the capital of Spain itself, there was a growing worry that they were going to be in Spain for a very extended stay. Tensions among the populace were reaching their worst. Godoy talked to Carlos IV and talked him into taking his family to the Palace of Aranjuez, which is another palace about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour southeast of Madrid. It was a move that was interpreted as a sign that the royal family was running away from the situation and possibly trying to bolt from the country. So basically, people thought they were skipping town. Uprisings took place in the town of Aranjuez, and once again, Fernando challenged his father to give up the throne and let him rule instead. Carlos accepted the proposal and abdicated. And Godoy, who had been hiding in a rug or rolled up rug for 2 days, was eventually caught, but he miraculously survived. He was kept alive. So now Fernando had become the king, Fernando VII, but not so fast. It didn't last very long. By this time, Napoleon wanted to get in on the act. He didn't like the way things were going. He saw it as a power vacuum that was developing in this country, and that wasn't in his interest. So he summoned basically the entire Spanish royal family to Bayonne, which is a seaside town in France near the border of Spain. This was in April of 1808. For a few days there, he waited while the family squabbled. Napoleon wanted Fernando to abdicate and return the throne to his father. Fernando didn't want to do that, but eventually he gave in. Then once that was achieved, believe it or not, then Carlos, who had just become king again, was told by Napoleon that it was his turn to abdicate again. So Carlos renounced the throne for a second time, this time in favor of another candidate. This was Joseph, Napoleon's brother, and he would become Joseph I of Spain. We'll have to tell you more about this man and his life after Spain later on. Joseph could not have picked a worse time to become king, because at that very moment, the very same time he was being proclaimed King of Spain, cities across the country, led by Madrid, were rising up against the French occupiers. These are the famous 2nd of May uprisings. Now, to be fair, Joseph would make a sincere effort to try to win over the Spanish, and he had some good ideas in mind, but it was too little too late. Napoleon's Vietnam, as some people call it, had begun, and it would turn out to be a major contribution to his downfall. But we will get to that at a different time. Carlos, Maria Luisa, his wife, the queen, and Godoy, the three of them, would move to France, just outside of Paris, and then they moved from there to the south of France, and then they finally ended up in Italy. Maria Luisa died on January 2nd, 1819, and Carlos would die himself just a few weeks later. Their remains were returned to Madrid, and they currently lie in El Escorial, where most of the king's and queen's remains are. Godoy would live for many more years in exile, mostly in France. He was persecuted by Fernando VII. His properties were confiscated. He lost his titles. One of them was the famous Prince of Peace, believe it or not. Some of his properties and his titles were returned to him in the 1840s, and he eventually died in 1851 in Paris, and that is where his body lies today. Was there anything positive to say about Carlos IV? Well, first of all, he wasn't a bad guy, and he certainly wasn't as bad as his son Fernando, which isn't saying much, but at least it's something. Carlos was said to have been a generally nice guy overall. Even Napoleon called him that. But he wasn't cut out for the job. He was just sort of a wishy-washy person. These were bad times to be like that. Early on, his intention was to continue with his father's policies, but it didn't take long for people to realize that this was not going to be as easy with all the complications that were going on. Then when things got worse, he decided to sort of regress and be more strict and to sort of put aside all this free thinking and equality stuff. One highlight that we could mention, and we actually have mentioned this before, during his reign was the famous Balmes expedition, the world's first attempt to carry out a health mission on a global level. Balmes was a doctor who led a mission and took 20 orphans to the colonies, or 22, I believe it was, to inoculate the population from smallpox. And it was pretty successful, all things considered. It was an immensely ambitious plan, but it did end up saving the lives of probably hundreds of thousands of people. I did a podcast on that one not too long ago. I recommend you listen to it. And of course, let's not forget that Charles also appointed Francisco Goya as court painter, a monumental decision for a monumental artist who would portray not only the royal family, but also the ills of Spain itself for the next 30 years. And that will be all for this episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, or Castos. You can also check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe there too. Or if you wish to support Brian's Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website. Or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.